You have 24 minutes, the podcast from 24 Hour Nation. My name is Randall White. Most of 24 Hour Nation's podcast episodes come in at around 24 minutes of length, hence the name for our podcast. This one runs longer, however. It runs longer for a very good reason. It runs longer because more attention needs to be given to misogyny in the nighttime economy and women's safety in social spaces. We talk with UK's Karen Wybro and begin with her description of her work.
I've come to land on a description as a women's safety consultant, which I think really does kind of sum up where I've ended up in this space. So I started out literally as a campaigner, so really wanted to make a difference locally, was really kind of, I guess, sparked into action by some of the horrific events here in the UK, like Sarah Everard's murder by a serving police officer, which I'm sure worldwide people know about. And started campaigning locally just because, as a mum as well of a little girl, felt quite passionately that, you know, 50 years on from some initiatives and marches in the UK around a serial killer called the Yorkshire Ripper, where women refused to stay at home, even though that's what we were instructed to do by the police. We saw ourselves in 2021 being told to do the same thing again. And really kind of just brought home to me and a lot of other people that this is still the message very much that we get sent as women, that, you know, there's a problem out there with male violence, but it's us women who have to do the staying at home. So that was kind of the start of this for me. I've been a business owner for 10 years. I've always had an interest in this area, but it definitely wasn't something that I foresaw becoming a career. And so I started basically causing pain and anxiety for my local council and local police. And so to the point where I think they were like, we need to get her on side because she's doing a lot of shouting. And actually, she's got some valid points. And I knew a couple of local councillors who were really, you know, who I'd kind of helped campaign for in the past. So they were like, look, let's do something. Let's work together and do something. And in the UK, we also have BIDs, so business improvement districts, obviously, yes, a private company, but they are, you know, funded by businesses who pay a levy to improve the local area. And it's usually like quite a small town or city area. So they were also very keen. So female managed company as well. So Sarah there was like, look, I want to do something as well. This has got to change. Things have got to change. So we started working on the idea of a women's safety charter. So these have become a bit more popular in the UK recently. I started doing some research around this and I just surveyed women in my town, in my city. And then I got approached by an academic from the University of Essex who said, like, I'm writing a paper on the safety gap, the perception of safety. Do you want to put your survey through our university panel and we'll get it Essex wide? To which I said that'd be amazing. So there's going to be a paper published on that. And we just found quite easily that women actually were quite vocal about this if you started talking to them and if you asked them the right questions. And they all agree, actually, this is true. Like, I don't feel safe. So the Women's Safety Charter was, you know, we borrowed inspiration from the London Mayor's Night Safety Charter, but our research showed that women didn't feel safe in the daytime either. And we felt quite strongly that actually we wanted a real range of businesses and organisations to sign up to this. So this is kind of where it all started. So we launched that charter and now I train the businesses to create safe spaces. Now, off the back of all that, but also alongside all of that, I started doing a lot of feminist content creation and received a lot of abuse, death threats, bomb threats.
Online.
Especially on TikTok was the most kind of toxic reaction that I was getting. And it really pushed me into the crazy, dark online, you know, world of the manosphere. And my teacher had kicked in here because I used to be a teacher and it was like, we need to do something about this for the safety of our children. So I just started talking to parents and schools about it. And so that's the other side of my consultancy, I guess, is the education as well. So I feel really passionately that we have a lot of work that we can do with councils, local authorities and businesses. And that's really got to be done on the grassroots level to help people. But also none of this is going to change until we really affect that difference. And to me, the cultural and social attitude change that we need starts right at the beginning and starts at home and starts in very small children. So they're the kind of two angles for me. It's top down and bottom up, because I guess that's the only way really I think we can make a difference.
That's perfect. And I think you're absolutely right. I've been thinking the same thing about why isn't more attention being given to the cause. We react to the result. But how do we get rid of the cancer early on? I love your references, and you use this online, the manosphere. And it's a perfect description of this kind of a heterosexual male predominative power, my way or the highway kind of thing, as we would say in Texas. So that's a major issue, I think, in the States right now. But I've heard you talk about that's also an issue in UK and UK politics. And so we are symbiotic on that particular stance. I want to go back and talk a little bit about the Women's Nighttime Safety Charter, or Women's Safety Charter. What is that? So people will fully understand what we're talking about here. I'm familiar with it, you're familiar with it, but I want people who are listening to go, well, what exactly is that? And how do I get one?
So the concept of our Women's Safety Charter here in Chelmsford, now we're quite a small city really, but this is how I look at it now. Someone else gave me this analogy and I was like, this is perfect. So someone said to me, do you remember the days where we used to smoke on aeroplanes? And I was like, well, actually, I'm a bit too young to remember that, but I do remember smoking on trains and smoking in kind of public places. And I also remember the smoking ban coming in the nighttime economy here in the UK, and thinking, you can't do that. You can't, like, people are not going to do it. They're not going to stand for this. People are not going to stop smoking inside. And then you see it happened. And now, even not that long ago, right? What we're talking 15 years ago in the UK, it's now absolutely crazy to think that that would be acceptable. So my work is really around, if we look then, and use the analogy in terms of misogynistic sexist behaviour, or, you know, sexual harassment, or any kind of unwanted, shall we say, behaviour in the nighttime economy, or in the daytime economy as well, in public life. We want to basically replicate that. So that behaviour isn't acceptable anymore. We're going to push it out of our city. So the concept around the Women's Safety Charter is that we build a city where we have safe spaces, and the safe spaces are places where, yes, you will be looked after if something happens to you. That should just be standard anyway, as far as I'm concerned. But there are also spaces that will not tolerate this. It's not accepted here. It's taboo here. You are not wanted here if that's how you behave. And we push it out and push it out and push it out. So the more businesses and organizations, and we do also have schools, colleges, you know, community venues aligned with our charter as well and pledged to our charter, the more of them that pledge to do the things that we ask them to do as part of the charter and to accredit their space as a safe space, the more we're really pushing this behavior out. Now, what we don't want to do is push that behavior onto another victim.
Right.
And to me, that's what reactive campaigns do. Yes, that person might not have experienced that because she happened to have a rape alarm that's been given to her by somebody. But you know what? All that's happened is that perpetrator has gone on to attack somebody else. But what we do is we create a culture in our society and in our community that says, you're not welcome here. And gradually changes the accepted behaviours that we see in the nighttime economy especially. But we also see, you know, people experiencing just trying to do their job, you know, in a bank, for example, or just trying to, you know, deal with the public or even a colleague, you know, and having this kind of unwanted behaviour that makes them feel uncomfortable. And that's the premise of the charter, that we get a map, you know, a physical map of these safe spaces that women know they can go to, and not just women, anyone who feels a part of a marginalized community or just feels like they're not going to be accepted in certain places. Now, I know, and I could tell you the places in town that I would never step foot in if I was on my own as a woman. We don't want those places anymore, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we need inclusive, welcoming spaces. And that means that everybody feels part of that place.
Well, and the charter itself, this is a document that has, what, several different points. And is it something that the city councilors have embraced and say, we stand behind this? And then some action allows businesses or entities or organizations to say, we will sign on to this. We will have a safe space in our venue or our facility in support of this safety charter. Is that really kind of how that works?
Absolutely how it works. Yeah. So it is a document, but we try and say, please don't think of it as a document. Please don't think of this as us walking into your venue, giving you another policy that you're going to go, okay, put behind the bar, you know, and never look at again.
Right.
This is very much more about, you know, creating your whole venue has to consider how welcoming and inclusive it is. So they sign up to a series of pledges, and those include, you know, having an ambassador in that space. In the nighttime economy, especially, we have a really high turnover of staff. So we need to make sure that whoever that is isn't someone who's, you know, a temporary member of staff that's going to leave the next week. So there needs to be a commitment for this to be embedded within their organization. They get given a whole toolkit of resources which we've created for them, and their posters, their videos, we ask them to use them on their social media to put them up in their space as well, to show that this behavior isn't tolerated. And to show that women's safety is everybody's concern. It's not just, you know, pick or choose. We all have a role to play in this. And the council basically funded the project. Oh. So the council funded the all of the toolkit to be created. They funded.
Is that available online? I mean, if we can direct people to go look at them.
Yeah, so it's on Chelmsford City Council's website. If you literally Google Chelmsford Women's Safety Charter, you'll see it there. So people make the pledge to sign up and they come along to my training. They don't get the accreditation until they've received the training that I provide.
And so it's an accreditation program too. So yes. Each entity, is this something that's renewable annually? Yep. Or?
So we have a review process as well. So we have a 6-month evaluation that we do with the businesses. So we capture data as well. We go along and visit the venue. We ask them if they've seen any changes from having this in place. Is there anything that they need more help with? And we also just drop in now and again and just see how it's going for people. And then after a year, we decide whether to renew them or not. So they apply. But it's not a case of they apply and get it. You know, they apply, they come to the training, you know, and then our community safety team here is brilliant. So we're really lucky that in Chelmsford we've got a really dedicated, amazing team who are really good at going out and talking to the businesses and kind of offering support. We offer support.
Is that through the police or the public safety department at the city?
Yeah. So this is city council level safety team. But we also have really great buy-in from the police.
That's
really
outstanding. Great. Congratulations. Yeah. My concern is sometimes, and I've seen this in some places that have adopted a women's safety charters, it just becomes something, like you said, that hangs on the wall behind the bar without any kind of, it's like a trophy. Oh, I did this, without there being really any meaningful teeth to it or buy-in or support or reinforcement or monitoring. And it sounds like this is the way you're making it work in Chelmsford, right?
Yeah, I would say like it wouldn't have the effect and the impact if it didn't have that person in the authority, you know, organization to really keep that going and to really insist that this is on the agenda. So I'm really lucky to, you know, have been commissioned to do this ongoing project with them. And we've even ring-fenced years 2 and 3 funding for it as well. So there's funding coming in for the next 2 years all around.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that. And that's good work, and good work that could be emulated, I believe, anywhere in the world. So that's one reason why 24 Hour Nation wants to elevate people who are doing good work and have good thoughts like you have. I want to segue just a little bit to the conversation of misogyny. And, you know, a lot of men just kind of stiffen when they hear the word the more they stiffen, the more, you know, they need to hear the word. But in the nighttime space specifically, since the majority of the people that listen to this podcast series are kind of mindful of nighttime issues, that there is this false sense of superiority that men have over women, or worse, it's even hatred or contempt. And it's not just limited to business sector or the cultural sector at night, but that is where we're focused. Like I said, I would like to break our conversation up into these kind of four areas of manifestations, if you will, of misogyny at night: sexual harassment, discrimination, stereotyping, and toxic culture. When we go through this list, I'm going to ask you to give me some sense of the prevalence of these in our pubs, clubs, restaurants, bars, et cetera. Also in particular industries like even healthcare, custodial services, sex workers. And what can business owners, elected officials, management people do about these in their own city? So sexual harassment, I define that as women who are objectified or treated as sexual objects that can lead to unwanted actions, uninvited actions, groping, et cetera. How prevalent is that? And what can be done in either a city or a business?
So first part of the question is that's really prevalent. So I think the latest statistics in the UK were 1.1 million people experienced sexual assault last year. So when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, you're looking at, I think it sits around 5%, you know, in a year will experience that. However, that's just reported figures, right? So, you know,
it's not like every time it happens, a flag gets sent up to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, with any of these kind of, with any sexual violence crimes, you know, you can look at the statistics and then you can look at the reality. So for me, I usually work around, if you look at some of the charities' estimates of how many crimes are actually reported. So looking at rape, which is obviously a more serious offence, but to give you an idea of that, you know, it's believed that only 1 in 6 are reported. Now, the issue there is that you've got your reported cases. I think last year were about 70,000, times that by 5, you're looking at 350,000 rapes occurring in 1 year in the UK of quite a small population, you know, 30 million men, I guess, you know, in terms of the male prevalence of that being the perpetrator. Sexual harassment, yeah, like you say, is an issue, and 70% of sexual harassment and sexual assaults take place in the nighttime economy, in pubs specifically, pubs and clubs and bars. Now, the weird thing is, I don't know if it's weird, I mean, it's quite a well-researched topic, but there's a gap between how safe you are and how safe you feel, right? That's not the same thing.
Right.
So as a business owner, you could say, my space is safe, because number one, you're not even hearing anywhere near the number of reports of events that are actually happening. So you've got no reporting going on. You've got no concept really of what's happening or how often it's happening. Number two, socially and culturally, it's become accepted for that kind of behavior just to happen, especially in the nighttime economy. So if I asked probably every woman listening to this, so every woman on Twitter, have you experienced sexual harassment? They're all going to say yes, pretty much, right? You know, so, you know, you've got your varying degrees of whether that's your bum being grabbed, you know, at the bar, or, you know, even that creepy move that some guys do with their hand around your waist to move you away, or just getting too close at a gig. You know, I mean, I go to a lot of gigs more than I go out, you know, clubbing these days. And I'm usually with my partner, who's a 6'3", very, you know, masculine looking guy, you know, so I don't get, you know, the hassle that I probably would have got when I was younger and would have got if I was on my own. But there's a real lack of awareness among men. Very good, well-intentioned men don't often appreciate how intimidating they are, or even the sense of intimidation that women feel in those spaces. Right. So it's not that they don't care. It's not that they really want to inflict, you know, fear on or inspire fear in these women, but they probably don't have a perception about it, because weirdly, women experience this all the time, but they don't talk about it because it's normalized.
Right.
You know,
right.
Nearly everyone I know has been flashed at. Nobody reported it. Nobody talks about it, because it's just like, oh, it's just one of those things that happens to you.
it's so, life. I don't, you know, I can't buy that. I can't buy that. I want to interfere and turn people's faces to it and make them look at it. Isn't that kind of where you are as well?
Absolutely. I think, like I said, when you actually talk to women, women will tell you, like, I have every training session I do, I get disclosures from women. And that can be just, you know, like, oh, there was a guy really pestering me the other day. So, you know, low level stuff too. I get women disclosing that they've been raped to me, you know, and they've never told anybody that, because we don't sit around the kitchen table talking about these things. You know, right. We don't sit there with our friends on a night out, really, unless the subject comes up in another format or in another capacity. You don't sit there and talk about it because, first of all, the low level stuff's become normalized. And secondly, it's triggering and it's upsetting. So, you know, we've got a lot of silence around the issue and we've got a lot of dismissing the issue because right. It's become normalized.
And your recommendation is don't be silent and don't dismiss it.
Yeah. And I guess for men, just to talk to women about it, because so many guys are really surprised when women actually start to reel off the number of experiences that they've had to be part of throughout their lives.
Well, I would think too that many men have some women in their world that, you know, that they, whether it's their mother or their wife or their daughter, that they might want to be more mindful are in these situations, yet they themselves will go out into a setting where they act like this and they're not, there's a disconnect. I want to talk a little bit about discrimination and stereotyping, and then we're going to wrap up with toxic culture. But we still seem to pop women in a particular place. I see this in nighttime workforce a lot. The women get the worst jobs, or because you're a woman, I'm going to have different dress code for you than I have for the men. Men can dress like slobs, but you gotta doll up, honey. You know, that kind of thinking is out there. Where are we with discrimination and stereotyping?
Stereotyping is quite interesting because this is something that I've really been thinking about lately. And I'm like of an older generation, so right, I don't go out every weekend, certainly don't engage in the nighttime economy as much as younger people. But again, I go to a lot of gigs, that's my thing. So live music is my thing. So I'm at gigs constantly in London, in Brighton, wherever. And then in terms of like pubs as a separate aside to that, you know, me and a female friend were just thinking about our local city here in Chelmsford, and we were like, what is there for us actually? And we were talking about this stereotype, and I'm from Essex. Now I guess the Essex girl thing is known in America.
I don't know what that means. What's an Essex girl?
Okay, let me explain that to you then. So this is a whole other cultural thing in England. So an Essex girl is generally known as ditzy, bit, you know, bit stupid, like shopping, like, you know, it's a real kind of stereotypical blonde, dumb kind of
yes, female. We have those, and I'm not going to begin to say where I would assign them to be from. Right. That would get me in trouble here in the States. Okay, Essex girl, got it.
I've grown up with a very strong stereotype of what an Essex girl is and should be, or, you know, as a butt of jokes, basically. Gotcha. Unfortunately, that does seem to play into some of the real stereotypes, because what we get offered in the nighttime economy is bottomless brunch, which is like bottles of Prosecco from like 11 in the morning. Right. So you basically get a hangover by about 2 p.m., you know, and or we get sold like boozy bingo, or, you know, there's these very kind of small, narrow thinking offerings, I think, for women. You know, when me and my friends are like, what we really want is a nice space with decent music and nice food. And that seems to be quite hard to find, it appears. But we've got some really cool independents now that have opened up in Chelmsford that are starting to do that. But so, yeah, to me, there feels like there's that stereotyping that, you know, what do women want? They want cheap booze. You know, they want to kind of go out with their mates and get hammered, you know, get obliterated, rather than any kind of cultural kind of significance in what women want or need from the economy, which I don't know how that is even, you know, I don't know if anyone else is thinking about this topic, but it's something that's really kind of on my mind a lot at the moment. And then other stereotyping in the nighttime industry I suppose you've got is like the barmaid thing. But, you know, it's really hard for women, especially women who are mothers, to even work in the nighttime economy because of shift patterns, because of the lack of public transport, you know, after certain hours.
Right.
How do you even have those positions? And that's before you've even considered safety.
Right.
So why would a woman want, you know, why would they choose? Our streetlights go off at 1 a.m. here.
Ah.
So 1 a.m., you're in complete darkness getting around. And with the cost of living crisis, fewer women are using public transport because it's too expensive. You know, they're walking more. You're just going to take yourself out of this equation altogether. You know, so, yeah, I guess there's a consumer stereotype, and there's definitely like a issues within the industry that I can't see how we get around that in terms of gender equality.
Okay. And there are systemic issues that perhaps this is where policymakers could step in and assist. We do talk about transportation at night. We do talk about lighting at night. We do talk about the infusion of cultural offerings as a buffer to that kind of toxic environment. And I want to come to that. Toxic culture, women can feel unsafe or unwelcome in certain spaces, which can lead them to just avoid those spaces. Now, what can a business do? First of all, a business needs to be mindful that if they want women as customers, there are things they might want to consider. What are some of those things?
Number one, women are 52% of the population and the biggest spenders. So why we are left out of this? I don't understand.
It doesn't make business sense, for one thing. It's also just the right thing to do to be inclusive.
Yeah. On a business level, it makes no sense at all. I have never found any research. I still can't find it. I have done a lot of Googling trying to find it. I can't find any research that looks at the cost to the economy from women not participating in some of this stuff. And as far as I can see, that no one's actually calculated that. It would be really interesting for me if somebody could actually calculate that and look at, are women engaging, first of all? Because I get a lot of nighttime economy businesses owned by men saying, I don't get any women in here. I know, well, more women need to come here. And I'm like, what are you doing to get the women through your door? What are you doing? Because it is the toxic culture. It could be a space, you know, it could just be a design of the space issue. But, you know, if you're looking at, okay, so this is my take on it. I wouldn't go in a pub that had Sky Sports banner on it, because to me, that's not welcoming. First of all, I'm not interested in sport. So, you know, a lot of women are, and that's absolutely great that, and here in the UK, our football team is amazing. Our women's football team is amazing. So that really saw a big increase in women getting involved in sport. But would they step into that place, especially as a woman on their own? I don't know. You know, it can be very intimidating to go into places where you've got large groups of men shouting, you know, it's naturally an intimidating place. You've got also the issue of a lot of these spaces are owned and run by men. Door staff, predominantly men. So do you feel, you know, without knowing that they have an actual pledge or some kind of promise that they've actually considered this within their space, do we know that they are going to consider what it's like for a woman to be in this space? That's the first thing they can do. There's really good research to show that if a space has some kind of policy in place around women's safety or just safety in general, they're much, much more likely to visit that space. So it's great business sense. It's great PR. You know, like we see, we've got an issue with spiking, you know, and that's the biggest thing that's being talked about by consumers at the moment. I've been spiked, but you see it everywhere. So we had an incident here in Chelmsford. It made national news, this spiking incident. And the venue didn't say anything. So it went viral online, it made national news, and the venue was silent. And I was like, guys, you need to acknowledge this. You need to say something, because just pretending there isn't an issue and pretending like, you know, there isn't a problem here is not gonna work. You know, people are being much more picky now, much more careful about where they're spending their money, because we don't have as much money in this financial crisis. So, you know, if people are going to make that really kind of strategic decision about where they go overnight time and where they spend that kind of, you know, money, that small amount of money now that they have on leisure, you know, purposes, they're going to be a lot more careful about where they spend it. What can we do as well to improve women's safety when they're traveling to and from venues? You know, we see a lot of good companies now looking at that duty of care as well to their patrons in that respect. You know, I don't like getting told we've got to leave a pub because it's closing up time, but they don't give any consideration to how a woman on her own is getting home, you know.
Especially since the lights are out.
Exactly. And to me, you know, I kind of ask myself sometimes when I hear about door staff kicking girls out onto the high street with no phone, no coat, no friends, no purse with them. I just think, like, I'm telling these people to be humans. And, you know, this should just be being a decent person, is that you think about the safety of that person that you've just kicked out onto the street. But, you know, it's just, there's so many things that businesses can do. And I think they have to start really thinking about that in this difficult financial era.
Well, and in the States, we would say it's an opportunity for them to man up, pun intended. And speaking with Karen Wybro, Karen Wybro Consultants, she's online at karen-wybro.com. That's W-H-Y-B-R-O.com. I love that, Wybro. And also on Twitter at Karen Wybro. She's also in our nighttime directory of resources at 24hournation.com. You can check more. You can check out about Karen and her work, particularly with the women's safety charters and this requirement that businesses kind of wake up to the opportunities to be a more welcoming space. That's terrific. Karen, I'm going to ask you one last question. Nightlife advocates and other listeners will spend about 24 minutes or so with this episode, and then they might just go on with their lives. If there was one seed you would like to plant and see take root in every listener's brain, or one action you would like to see every listener take when it comes to misogyny at night, what would that be?
Talk to your female peers, friends, colleagues, relatives about what they have experienced from being a teenage girl all the way up until now, and how it feels to them to walk down a street at night, and how it feels compared to when men do the same.
Guys, talk to the women in your life and in your business setting about how safe they are and how safe they feel when they go out. From there, chart your path to being an advocate for women at night. This has been Season 2, Episode 13 of 24 Minutes from 24 Hour Nation. Thank you for listening. My name is Randall White.